couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Blue Beetle, Strays, Haunting of the Queen Mary, One-of-a-Kind Marcy, and Solar Opposites Season 4. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the Trailer Park, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring The Machine. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And until it blows up in everyone's face, you can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Let's just really quickly swing by the box office and look at Barbenheimer still ruling the box office. Barbie made $34 million last weekend, and Oppenheimer made $19 million. That's after being in the theaters for a month. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles did a really good hold. It only dropped 45% and came in third. Meg 2 dropped more and came in fourth with $13 million. But the domestic number's not the important one for that one. It's the international number. It's doing very well in China, which is where it was co-financed. There's a subplot in the movie with Chinese characters, so all spoken in Chinese. So it's very clear that they made this one for an international audience. But the big news from the box office last weekend is The Last Voyage of the Demeter sunk with only $6.5 million. And a lot of people are pointing this out as saying, well, you know, it's the second Dracula-based movie that flopped this year. Now, I don't know if it's necessarily that people are tired of Dracula. I think that Renfield and The Last Voyage of the Demeter flopped for two totally different reasons. Renfield was not a mainstream movie. I mean, it was more a horror comedy in the vein of the original Evil Dead movies. I'm talking about Evil Dead and Evil Dead 2, Dead by Dawn. I'm not talking about the remakes where they marketed them as a big action horror film. I'm talking about the original first two Evil Dead, maybe even Army of Darkness. And I think that Renfield itself was for a niche audience. Last Voyage of the Demeter, I think the reason that thing flopped was there nobody of any note was in the movie. Not that it would have helped because there was nobody able to promote it during the strike, but they didn't know that when they were making the film. So I think that there was a lack of star power and an August release date under Barbenheimer, a bunch of stuff they couldn't predict. But that's, I think, part of the reason that Demeter flopped. The next piece of news I want to talk about is I'm going to get defensive here on a couple actresses. There's three of them in the news right now, Rachel Zegler, Sandra Bullock, and Judy Garland. And people just need to back off of all of them for three very different reasons. Like Sandra Bullock, she's all caught up in that hubbub about Michael Orr from The Blind Side and how he did not know that he was under a conservatorship. And he's feuding, and he's got a beef, very public beef, with the Tuies, who are the characters in The Blind Side. And there's people out there saying, Sandra Bullock should give back her Oscar for that movie. What are you talking about? She made a movie. It's not her job to research the background of these people. She was basing her character on a book. And also, on top of it, Sandra Bullock, she's going through some stuff right now. I don't think they were married, but her longtime partner just died. So leave Sandra Bullock alone. You know, I don't defend people like this all that often, but you know what? This lady has enough on her plate than to deal with something that Michael Orr didn't even know he was in a conservatorship. Why should Sandra Bullock? Now, going to Rachel Zegler. Rachel Zegler is best known for being in West Side Story, the remake that Steven Spielberg did. And then she was in a couple other movies. She ended up in Shazam, Fury of the Gods. And she's just an actor and a singer and a dancer, but she's just an actor. She's a face on screen. Well, people are coming after her because of things she said about the Snow White movie that she's in. She's in the live action version of Snow White. People are saying, oh, she's overwoke and she's causing the problems and I'm tired of this woman. Like, for example, she talks about, well, you know, this isn't a movie about a woman waiting for a prince, and the prince may not even be in the movie. He may not even end up in the final cut. And people are just losing their collective minds over this and attacking her. Well, here's, first of all, every clip I've seen of her saying that, they're old clips from like September and December of last year. But all the clips that I'm saying, she's saying it literally sitting or standing next to Gal Gadot. And Gal Gadot's saying the exact same thing, but nobody's going after Gal Gadot. Why? Because she has some power behind her as a star power. They're going after the smaller, younger, more naive version. First of all, Rachel Zegler had no impact on the script whatsoever for Snow White. She's just doing what the writers did. And you know who? If you want to blame somebody, blame Greta Gerwig, who helped write the script. She is the one who directed Barbie. Yeah, good luck tarnishing her name now. And Mark Webb is the director. Rachel Zegler's playing a part, and she's just doing press, and people are coming after her because of something she's saying about how other people made a decision on this. And they're going after her because the dwarves aren't dwarves, but they changed them from being dwarves because Peter Dinklage raised a stink of this. Leave Rachel Zegler alone. She has nothing to do with this. And then finally, Judy Garland, somehow she got embroiled in a big scandal right now, and she's been dead for decades, but this picture surfaced of her in the 30s doing this role, and she was in blackface, and people are like, oh, isn't this terrible? You know, I mean, my God, this girl was being abused by the studio. First of all, she was a teenager at the time. She was like 15 or 16 when she shot this blackface scene. Allegedly, she had already raised issues about the scene and using the blackface then, but she was abused by the studio sexually and mentally, and she was physically abused by making her stay up all night. They gave her amphetamines and were feeding her pills. If you know anything about Judy Garland, it's a tragic story of a youth in trouble as an actor. And so you can't hang it on her, and then people are like, well, did she apologize as an adult? She died in like 1969. Nobody was apologizing for blackface in 1969. I mean, if she were alive today, which she wouldn't be because she'd be 100, even if she managed to live this long, yeah, maybe she would have apologized, but you can't leave Judy Garland alone. Leave these actresses alone. Quit looking for stuff to be offended about. Listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit is Maestro, which is coming to theaters on November 22nd and later Netflix at Christmas.
I'm thinking of a number.
Oh, I don't know. 9.
No.
5.
No, you have to think.
I'm trying to.
It's 2, darling.
2.
It's 2. Like us, a pair. 2 little ducks in a pond.
This is Bradley Cooper's next directorial effort, but nobody cares about the movie at this point. They're all upset about the fact that he has a prosthetic nose because he's playing Leonard Bernstein. And even Bernstein's family's come out and defended it. But here's the thing. I get it because there's this whole, and I hate using this term because I feel this term's offensive in itself, but people call it Jew face. It's like blackface or yellow face. When people would make caricatures of Jewish characters, they'd put a big nose and big glasses and the hair and everything, all the very stereotypical stuff. And, you know, you're going to have this with Golda next week as well because Helen Mirren has a prosthetic nose to play Golda Meir. Look, if you're going to be playing a Jewish character, don't put a fake nose on. It's like use makeup to color your skin for appropriate reasons. Like when Tom Hiddleston played a grizzled explorer in Kong Skull Island, he had makeup on to make him look tan, but he was not going in blackface. That's a huge difference. You can wear a prosthetic nose if you're playing anyone but a Jewish character. That's kind of how that works, because it's just going to trigger everybody. The next movie I want to hit really quickly is Scott Pilgrim Takes Off. It's just coming to Netflix on November 17th.
We are Sex Bomb! 1, 2, 3, 4! Hey! Hey!
This is a series based on the Scott Pilgrim versus the World. It uses a lot of the actors, and Edgar Wright's involved in it because he directed the film. I was never a big fan of the film. I love the fact that they're going back to the fan base for this. And they're using people like Michael Cera and Mary Elizabeth Winstead to play these roles. I'm probably watching a little bit, but, you know, Scott Pilgrim is not my cup of tea. Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Strays and one-of-a-kind Marcy. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews and talk about Strays. A dog is abandoned miles from home and befriends a group of strays to find his way back home for revenge.
I'm lost.
You're a stray man.
You can do anything you want.
This beer doesn't taste good, but I like how it's making me feel.
I really should find my way back home.
We're completely lost, and my little puppy paw pads are really hurting right now.
This could be a lot worse.
How could this get worse?
Ah! Hold on, buddy!
Ah! I'm starving.
How many of these should we eat?
All of them?
Give me a sec.
Whoa.
You look different.
You look different, too.
How so? Is it my human hands?
No, this is not a kid's movie. Aside from there being puppies, what about this says kid's movie? The typeface that they're using is a very gangster-looking typeface. It says R-rated on the poster. It references like Cocaine Bear on the poster and in the trailer. They have swearing and dirty jokes all through the trailer. There's an entire trailer that is nothing but bleeped out elements of this movie. If you are a parent and you're stupid enough to bring your kids to a movie just because there are dogs on the poster, you deserve every awkward cringe that you have. You deserve every single one of that. Do not just blind take your kids to this movie, you idiots out there. With that said, Strays is an adult comedy. It stars Will Ferrell and Jamie Foxx, Ella Fisher, Randall Park. They play the Strays, and there's a bunch of other people doing voices in there. And look, I love the dogs. I think the dogs are adorable in this movie, and they're well-trained and look hilarious, but ultimately it's a raunchy comedy, and it's told from a dog's point of view. So you get all the jokes about bowel movements and sniffing and urinating and all the stuff that everybody knows dogs do. So yeah, I mean, and you know that going in. Heck, from the trailer, you know what's going to be happening. Because dogs are lovable, but they're also filth monsters. I mean, I've owned dogs in the past, and I love the companionship. I love the joy that they bring. But yes, they will go roll and poop. You know, that is what dogs do. Dogs are filth monsters. And they play off of this in this movie. But by the time you're at the 8th or 10th sniffing butt jokes, I'm like, it's wearing thin. And it was funny. I remember there was a time I interviewed the comedian Jim Gaffigan. And I'm talking like I interviewed him like 20 years ago. Before he really blew up. I mean, he's blown up now, but this is kind of before he blew up. I have his history of interviewing a bunch of celebrities before they were really famous. Like, I interviewed Miranda Lambert once. I interviewed Taylor Swift, like, before she headlined shows, like, when she was opening for somebody. And she was this giddy little 16-year-old girl. And so I interviewed Jim Gaffigan once, years and years ago, and I asked him about the fact that he doesn't use a lot of profanity in his stand-up. And he's like, well, you know, anybody can say the F-bomb. It takes a real art to make it funny without saying that. And he's absolutely right. And that's one of the problems when you have uncensored stuff. If it's censored, it's sometimes funnier getting around what you can and can't say. That there's it takes really good artistic writing to do that. When you can just drop whatever word you want in there, especially if it's just language, like in a movie like Strays, there's nothing creative about it. If you just say the F word, nothing creative about it. When I had my kids when they were little, if they came in, I remember my son once came in, he's like, oh, fart, fart, fart. And I'm like, nope, 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 nope. And it was funny, my older son was on the phone with his girlfriend at the time. And I yelled at my youngest son because he did that. And I said, no, you don't just make a joke. It has to be funny. And it has to be relevant. And my older son's girlfriend busted out laughing because she thought I was yelling at him because he made a fart joke. And I'm like, no, no, no. I yelled at him because he wasn't creative and clever with it. You make the joke, but don't just go for the low hanging fruit. It's okay to go for some low hanging fruit, but don't only go for the low hanging fruit. Nothing wrong with being lowbrow. And that's the problem with this movie is it's lowbrow and it never even gets up to medium brow. There's like one funny, and they blow it in one of the a couple of the trailers. There's this very funny cameo in there. And when I saw the movie, I'm like, I always thought the cameo was the funniest part in the film because it was just so random and out there. Mel Brooks was brilliant about that. Yeah, he'd have a scene like the beans and campfire scene in Blazing Saddles, but at the same time, he would have some pretty esoteric stuff in there. And that's what's missing in Strays. So, I mean, if you just want to see a movie about dogs pooping, yeah, it's there. And it has some funny moments. I mean, it is funny at times, and the four-legged actors are adorable, but it suffers from jokes that could have been a little higher up the evolutionary ladder. I mean, it's still mildly entertaining, so I'm going to say Strays kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about one-of-a-kind Marcy. This Apple TV Plus Peanuts special follows Peppermint Patty's sidekick Marcy as she overcomes her anxiety to help the other kids at school.
My fellow students, I am here to remind you to vote in the student council election.
Hey, Marcy, I think you'd make a great president.
If I were president, I'd never have a moment of peace.
I guess that makes sense. You once told me you were an invertebrate.
I think you mean introvert, sir.
That's the one.
There's a lot of people out there that could use a hand. And I want to help them. But when I try to, all I want to do is run away.
Apple TV has the broadcast rights to the Peanuts stuff. And they have for several years. So if you want to watch the Peanuts specials anytime throughout the year, like if you want to, like, we're coming up to Halloween, you want to watch The Great Pumpkin? Get Apple TV Plus. And they keep adding more Peanuts specials, and I think that's great. And they're mining some of the characters, like they did one for Mother's Day with Peppermint Patty, because Peppermint Patty doesn't have a mother. I mean, she has a mother, but that's, it's canon. It goes all the way back to the 70s. And now they've got this one about Marcy, and the whole thing is you never think of Marcy as a character. You never think of about getting into her character, but I think that that's great. I like the fact that they're exploring. Not everything has to be about Snoopy or Linus or Charlie Brown and Lucy. I mean, it's more than just those four characters. And it focuses on the fact that Marcy's an introvert. Like, part of the story is this, is there's this golf tournament at school, and Marcy is the caddy for Peppermint Patty. And Peppermint Patty is kind of an absolute disaster without Marcy as her caddy. And Marcy likes to sort of sit back and say, okay, use this club and this is how you do it, and give her the advice. And that's what she likes. She doesn't want to be in the spotlight. And this is her struggling with moments where she's got to be in the spotlight, or people want her to be in the spotlight and she wants to be behind the scenes. And what I like about this is it gives a very positive look at being an introvert. Now, I'm an introvert. People don't believe that, but I am an introvert because I hate people. I can talk, I can be social, but it's not about whether you can interact with people. Being introverted is how you recharge. And for me, on the weekends, I sit at home and I just relax. I get in my own little hobbit hole and I watch movies and I don't like to leave. I get home on a Thursday night and I'm like, I don't have to leave until Monday. I am happy as a clam. That means you're an introvert. And too much of our society has been pro extroverts. It's like, oh, well, you should be doing this. Like, no, it's okay to not want to do sports and clubs and everything in school. Allow people to embrace their own absence of people. That's a very positive spin. The only ding I have against this is it's about golf, and I find golf colossally boring. I know, I live in Columbus, Ohio. It's a big golf town. I don't care. I'm so bored with golf. I have no interest whatsoever in golf. But I mean, it is a welcome spotlight on a side character with a focus on introverted strength. It's a cute little show. So I'm going to have to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Blue Beetle and Haunting of the Queen Mary. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about Blue Beetle. A recent college graduate stumbles upon a mysterious artifact that turns into a symbiotic supersuit.
What is going on? I just want to run.
It's called the Scarab. It's some kind of world-destroying weapon. It's designed to protect its host.
To say that you want.
Sometimes it does what you want and sometimes it doesn't.
The Scarab chose you, but it belongs to me.
The love you feel for your family makes you weak.
It's like Batman stuff.
Batman's a fascist.
I just want to rap.
Now, first of all, Blue Beetle, the character, has been around since the 30s. There's been three Blue Beetles, three different versions of Blue Beetles, just as there have been a couple versions of Superman. The original And the second one, the first two, I think the first one was before it was even part of the DC universe. And then they brought him in. And I remember reading the comics in the 70s and 80s, and Blue Beetle would show up now and then. And back then he was just a guy who had, he had a suit. It was all just technology. It was like Iron Man or Batman. And, now they've got this new character of Blue Beetle with this symbiotic suit. And I think it was introduced about 20 years ago in the comics. This character of Jaime Reyes, who is, he's a Mexican American. And that makes it notable because it's the first big studio produced superhero movie with a Latino superhero. I'm not familiar with the character. I'm not terribly familiar with the original Blue Beetle either. I think technically this is the first of the new DC Universe movies. But don't put that on Blue Beetle's shoulders, because this is not starting a universe. And I think that this is good, because not every movie needs to be launching a universe. This just exists. It's a self-contained story. And I think that that's good. That plays to a strength of the movie. On the flip side, it is just this very simple story we've seen before. I mean, it draws from a whole bunch of other movies. It draws from Iron Man in terms of the look, and it draws from Venom because of that, the whole symbiotic suit thing. It draws from Black Panther because of the family references. It also draws from the Fast and Furious movies because of the family references, and Shazam, and has elements of Shazam in there. So unfortunately, there have been so many superhero movies made that there's no way to do this movie without making it feel like it's derivative of other films. And that's a shame, because it's a lot of fun. But like I said, I feel like I'm playing a greatest hits at this point. And there's some silly stuff and some cliche stuff. There's a level of quality that the Marvel movies have earned. And yeah, some of them are cheesy and goofy and silly, but they've really built quite an impressive volume of stuff. And they've done some very serious stuff and some kooky stuff. DC hasn't earned that yet. So they're still playing around with stuff, and it feels not cheap, but it feels like just beginning to sort of come together on certain things. Now, the cast is decent. You know, George Lopez is probably one of the more recognizable names. He kind of plays the uncle. Susan Sarandon plays the bad guy. She's the weapons dealer. And she just chews the scenery in it. Zolomar Dueña plays Blue Beetle. Now, he's one of those, he's going to be a breakout star from this, at least that's what the hope is. And I think he does a good job. He's got a little bit of seasoning that needs to happen as an actor. But, you know, I mean, it has the action, it has the spectacle. Like I said, some of the writing's a little silly. And some of the writing leans on cliche. And it does draw from the history of Blue Beetle as a character. That can be frustrating, because if you don't know who Blue Beetle is, and let's face it, most people don't, it's a not a well-known super character. But they have a lot of Blue Beetle references to the older Blue Beetle, the original Blue Beetle, or the intermediary Blue Beetle, that only really works and is noticed by the fans. And I don't know how many fans there are of this original character. But overall, I mean, once you divorce yourself from the fact that it's relaunching a franchise, it's okay. And to their credit, they're not trying to relaunch a franchise with this. They're just trying to make a family-oriented superhero movie, and it works. I think it does work. It has some weird mixed messaging at times. Like, there's like things where it's like he's not going to kill anybody, and then in the next scene they're just wiping out people. But I guess that's the rest of his family, so they're a little bit harder, I guess. Still, I mean, it's got heart and some fun spectacle, but it draws from some more recognizable blockbusters, which makes it lack originality. But still, I'm gonna say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about The Haunting of the Queen Mary. This is a thriller. I don't know if it's not getting a wide release. It's in limited release. So you may have to wait a couple weeks to see it come to a local theater. But it's a ghost story that follows two families decades apart as they confront malevolent spirits on the classic ocean liner.
Imagine taking a tour of the Queen Mary. Not as it is now, but as it was in 1938. And the stranger stories.
Ghost stories? You want to call them the haunted tour?
Primer. Dad!
Lucas! If you stay here, you'll get trapped.
I can't leave my son alone here.
What's funny is this is the second weekend we've got a horror movie on a boat. And while The Last Voyage of the Demeter has a higher budget and a more lavish production design, I think this movie does more with its subject matter than The Demeter did. It's a very different movie because that was very much a chilling vampire, Hammer Films inspired type movie. This one's a little bit more of a modern movie. It's better than something like Ghost Ship, which is sort of a cheesy movie that was made like 20 years ago. But it deals with the ghosts on the Queen Mary. And if you don't know anything about the Queen Mary, and I really didn't, but it's a ship and it's a famous ocean liner. And it's done everything from transport soldiers to World War II, to just being a luxury liner. And I didn't realize it's well known for being haunted. There's multiple stories of deaths on board and ghosts that interact with passengers. And I guess even now you can go do ghost tours on it. And this plays into that. In this film, it tells parallel stories. One of them is in 1938 while it's on the ocean. And the other one is a modern story of these people basically trying to build a virtual tour of it. And they're interacting with malevolent ghosts and they're all tied together. And so there is a mystery to it with some of the characters, and it has some really genuinely creepy and some very disturbing moments, which I think work. I mean, it does go on a little long. It runs over 2 hours. It could have been a little tighter, that's for sure. And I have a lot of respect for some of the big swings it makes in terms of the story. It does some stuff that's pretty ambitious from a story perspective. It's not just a basic, this ghost is coming after you type ship. You know, it's not 13 ghosts or something like that. But at times, those big swings, it doesn't necessarily hit that all the way out of the park. But, you know, you get a nice little ground roll double out of the whole thing. There are big swings, and the writing at times does feel a little clunky in trying to time everything together between these two stories without revealing your payoff. Because one of the biggest problems in a horror movie is if you explain what's going on too early, then there's no surprises. And it holds back the surprises sometimes a little bit too much that it gets a little convoluted. And I think by the end, I was like, okay, I think I know what's going on here. And I think in the end, it works out to be a pretty well tied together movie. But it follows a bit of a rocky path there. So, I mean, I give this thing credit because it's a much smaller movie. It's a lower budget thing. It's not something like The Last Voyage of the Demeter, which had all the benefits of a massive production and squandered it. Whereas this one, I think, kind of makes the most of what they've got. So, you know, I'm going to have to say it's atmospheric and clever, and there are some strong moments in this sometimes overworked narrative. I'm going to say The Haunting of the Queen Mary kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, we've got Solar Opposites Season 4 and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring The Machine. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr to wrap up the reviews. And let's talk about Solar Opposites Season 4. Everyone's favorite suburbanite aliens are back for some more raunchy comedy action.
Would you stop playing Pupa Shot? He's not an arcade game.
Wait, is his voice just gonna be like that from now on?
Yeah, but nobody's gonna notice.
A big part of the mission is us fitting in on Earth. Everyone looked like a perfect non-weird family. Why do you have to be like this?
The wall could be frozen over in 2 months.
You know how we've been trying to find something that will complete us as a family?
It's the theme of the season.
The Solar Opposites are going on a road trip.
Okay, this time Daddy got us a regular bus with almost no bombs, baby.
The Solar Opposites were caught up in the Justin Roiland hubbub several months ago. If you're not familiar with it, Justin Roiland is one of the people with Dan Harmon. He created Rick and Morty. And he did the voice of Rick and a couple other voices. And then he started Solar Opposites and played the voice of Corvo, who's the main character. And some inappropriate behavior came to light. You can Google him. I'm not going to go into all the allegations against him. But this resulted in him getting dropped from Rick and Morty and Solar Opposites and Koala Man, too. And supposedly by this point, he really wasn't doing anything on Rick and Morty except for providing voices and on Solar Opposites doing the voice of Corvo. Well, what they did is they said, okay, we're going to fire you. You're not going to be working on this anymore. And Hulu, 20th Century Fox, now a part of Disney, decided to get their own person to do the voice. And instead of just bringing somebody in who could do an impression, a similar sounding voice, they got somebody wildly different. They got Dan Stevens, who's got a very posh British accent, naturally. And he doesn't try to do a Corvo voice. They just change his voice. And I give him credit for that because that's impressive that they said, you know, we're not going to even pretend that this is the same voice. We're just going to change it completely. And because it's a science fiction, goofy, silly series, they can find a way to do that. And I give them credit for it. Now, this season of Solar Opposites has some very funny moments, as they all do. It's self-aware. And that's one of the things that makes Solar Opposites fun, is that it is self-aware, that it knows it's on Hulu, that it knows it's a TV show. And they constantly move in and out of that awareness in the series. One of the problems when you have with this, the same thing with Rick and Morty, is sky's the limit on this stuff. You can go as wacky and as silly and as ridiculous as you can with the science fiction. And this is what I appreciate about Rick and Morty, and I do a degree on Solar Opposites, is they do play to the over-the-top, crazy sci-fi elements that I grew up with, that I really do appreciate. But with that, you still have to stay grounded, and they managed to do that. Now, it's not as out there as Rick and Morty, but it does employ certain things that we see in stuff like Rick and Morty or Family Guy. In particular, there's a subplot of The Wall, a bunch of people that the little girl alien keeps in this wall. She shrinks people down and puts them in this wall-sized terrarium, and they always have a story of them sort of going feral in the wall. And I've never been a big fan of the wall stories. I prefer to just go back to the standard alien stories. And they seem to be busting out another side story that we're supposed to follow in the upcoming seasons. And that's fine. I just sort of like the more bizarre take on the suburban lifestyle characters that we see, sort of the alien version of TGIF from the 90s. So, you know, in the end, I like this season of Solar Opposites. It's not as out there as it could be, and it does make its jokes very self-referential, and I like that to a degree. They don't overdo it, and I like where it's going. I like this. I think it's a decent reset after some behind-the-scenes drama and sets up a whole new normal for more sci-fi humor. I'm going to say this season of Solar Opposites kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. The release I want to talk about this week is The Machine, which came out in May in theaters. It's now available on DVD and Blu-ray. Bert Kreischer fictionalizes his life in this wacky international adventure featuring himself in trouble with the Russian mob.
Are you the machine?
Ma'am, the party's outside.
23 years ago, you stole the only thing my father ever cared about.
Sorry.
This is some sort of TikTok prank?
Definitely a prank. Clearly that's a fake gun.
Or not.
You're coming with me back to Russia.
Russia?
Seth, why are you talking all fast like you're on speed or something?
Because I'm on speed. Oh. More drugs. Bert. Take off that shirt and show those SOBs who you really are.
First of all, I have to just tell this story. I've met Bert Kreischer a couple times in my life, back when I used to do in-studio appearances at a radio station in Columbus. Bert would show up. They bring in comedians all the time. I'd run into a bunch of them. And Bert, I ran into him a couple times there, and Bert was always, I mean, talk about like the most congenial guy, but he was completely leaning into his persona. I remember showing up there, and they have a beer tap at this radio station. I mean, it's in sort of their common area. And the guy who owns a radio station opened up the beer tap and was pouring beer for Bert. And it was like, I mean, like 7 a.m. And so, yeah, Bert was totally into it. I remember coming in into the studio and I'm like, woo, wow, it smells like a brewery. But Bert is engaging. He's a real sweet guy, really nice. Now, granted, he was on, you know, at that point, you know, you're in that mode. But I had some really crazy conversations just off the air with Bert that I can't repeat on the radio. But he also is a good talker. I remember he can get people to engage. He can get people to talk about themselves. So, you know, Bert's a real interesting character, and it was neat to see him get to do his own movie based on his stand-up and just kind of see him blow up. You know, I said earlier in the show, I've met or interviewed people earlier in their career, and this was when Bert was really building a following. And then he kind of blew up. So it was nice to meet him. And then as I'm watching this movie, I'm like, oh, okay, this is what he kind of turned into. Now, the movie itself is, it's funny. I mean, it's based on his stand-up. It's based on a story he told. And I mean, it's obviously, you know, a completely fictionalized version of his life, you know, bringing him in with the Russian mob. One of the best parts of this is Mark Hamill, Luke Skywalker himself, plays his father. And I love the things that Mark Hamill has done that are not Luke Skywalker. Because outside of Luke Skywalker, nobody knows him for anything. But I mean, he did a whole bunch of voice work. He did stuff like the Joker in the Batman cartoon. And, you know, he shows up in things all the time. He did a movie called Comic Book, the Movie, which was a lot of fun. He did that before they did the remakes or the re-sequels of Star Wars. And he shows up in like some of the weirdest places. And some of his choices now are very funny. And I love the fact that he's playing a dad in this one. To a guy who's like close to 50 already. So it's a fun. I think Mark Hamill has some fun with this movie, and it's not a banger from beginning to end. It's not just non-stop laugh out loud, but it has some very funny moments, especially if you know or you're familiar with Bert Kreischer's stand-up, you get a lot of that persona and that type of humor in there. It plays a bit as an action movie because, of course, he's running around in Russia trying to stop these mobsters, and so it plays a bit as an action movie, and that's fine. But ultimately, it's there for the comedy, and I will say this: Kreischer commits to it, and that's what makes it work. It runs a little long, but that's okay. I still think it's a lot of fun. Now the Blu-ray comes with a decent amount of special features. They've got like outtakes and bloopers and deleted scenes. They've got a making of and some behind the scenes stuff. They've got this premiere party that they filmed. And one of the things that's really kind of cool about it is he brings in his parents at one point to actually meet Mark Hamill, who plays his dad. So you see his dad, and his dad is not at all like Mark Hamill. Certainly not at all like the character he is in this movie. And this kind of falls in this run of stand-up comedians doing fictionalized versions of themselves. You know, they did that. Who was it? Joe Coy did that with, I think, was it Easter Sunday? And we've seen these movies pop up every now and then. And they're enjoyable. This one's, I think, probably the most out there and crazy, but it works. But I mean, ultimately, it's on brand with Kreischer's stand-up persona, and the film pulls some punches, but it manages a workable story and some laugh-out-loud moments. I'm going to have to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this week. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Gran Turismo and Golda. And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.